This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today in Turkey, the foreign minister of Sudan warned that his country would retaliate against any foreign troops that tried to intervene in Darfur. That's a region in western Sudan where pro-government militiamen are conducting a campaign of violence that many say amounts to genocide. An estimated 30,000 people have been killed by the Janjaweed militia. A million more have been forced to flee from their homes. The militiamen were armed by the government in Khartoum and sometimes attack in concert with Sudanese airstrikes, but the government denies any involvement. Under pressure from the United States, among others, the government vowed to disarm the Janjaweed, but thus far little has been done. British Prime Minister Tony Blair has said nothing is out of the question to resolve the humanitarian crisis in Darfur, including sending troops. In Washington last week, both houses of Congress unanimously passed resolutions to declare the conflict genocide. Later in the program, Iran defies the UN and resumes production of a key component of its nuclear program. And comedian Lewis Black joins us from Boston and the Democratic Convention. But first, the dilemma in Darfur. What do you think the United States should do? Is it enough to provide aid? Should the U.S. assist regional peacekeepers or the UN? Or is it time to consider some kind of military intervention? Could intervention prevent another Rwanda, or might it lead to another Somalia? Remember Black Hawk Down. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now on the from our studios in Boston is Democratic Representative John Conyers of Michigan. Good to speak with you again, sir. Excuse me?
Greetings.
John Conyers, there you are. Okay.
Congressman Conyers reporting for duty.
Thank you so much, sir. And also with us is Republican Representative Thomas Tancredo of Colorado. He's with us from Denver. Thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having
Hello,
us.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, John. How are you doing, bud?
Thank you, my friend.
Representative Conyers, let's begin with you. I understand you met with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan yesterday to discuss Darfur. What can you tell us?
Well, I was able to leave the convention, fly to the United Nations yesterday, meet at 12:30 with Kofi Annan and five of his aides, and we were led by ranking member Don Payne and Jan Schakowsky of Chicago, Illinois. The essential point was, where do we go from the incredible result of the work of Tom Tancredo and Frank Wolf and Lantos and Hyde in getting the resolutions, the resolution through not only the House of Representatives, but through the United States Senate. Now that our government has taken the official position that genocide is now really what is going on in Sudan. This gives our administration the opportunity to go to the Security Council and get the support we need there for the Geneva Treaty to kick in.
Which would mean what? Intervention? Aid?
Well, it means both. And I'm glad you mentioned them simultaneously, because sending aid, food, medical supplies in without a military support would be a waste of time, because these goods and services would be captured. So the very delicate question facing us is right now, how do we get this through the Security Council so that this can become real? And there's two or three ways that we can do it.
Well, if you could briefly, and then we'll go to Congressman Tancredo.
Well, I can restrain myself because I want to hear from Tom.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, very well. Congressman Tancredo, you not only sponsored, were among the sponsors of this legislation that passed in the House and Senate, also the author of a powerful op-ed piece that was in the Denver Post over the weekend, but what do you think the United States government should do at this point?
It has to, as my colleague says, it must press the Security Council for a resolution on genocide. To put in play, then, a series of events that would hopefully bring to an end the horrible conflict that is now, of course, facing us in Darfur. We have been able, over a long period of time and a lot of pressure, and I'm talking about international pressure, but certainly the United States has been leading that pressure, we've been able to stop the conflict between the North and the South. They are now in peace talks, but what has happened is that this new conflict has developed in the North, in the region called Darfur. This is not Muslim against Christian. This is Muslim against Muslim, but it is Arab against Black. It is a perfect example of, unfortunately, we have to say this, it's a perfect example of genocide. It is, the aggression is designed to remove a group of people, either by force in terms of moving them out, making them part of a diaspora, but if not that, to actually destroy them. And as a part of that, by the way, they include rape as a tactic to impregnate women with, quote, lighter-skinned children. That's what they tell them. I mean, if this isn't, in every single way, meeting the criteria we've established, the United Nations has established, for genocide, I really don't know what is. So we have to press for that. Many of our European colleagues are very, uncomfortable, with this designation, because it does mean eventually putting troops on the ground. That is true. That's what it comes to, because you cannot deliver, as John said, John Conyers, you cannot deliver humanitarian assistance because the security conditions are, of course, such that it would prevent it. So you have established security.
And would these be, just to put a fine point on it, would these be American, British troops? Would these be African troops? Whose troops would they be?
Well, that is something that, of course, is established after the resolution is. But it would be probably, most likely, and this is the only thing that we can sort of read the tea leaves at this point and say, most likely it would be a combination of countries offering support. The troops themselves would almost certainly be from neighboring states, African states, and we, the United States and other European countries, let's say, will be providing logistic support. We've done this before. We've done this in other places. It seems to me that we should do it here. And I tell you right now, the threats of the government in Khartoum, the Sudanese government, those threats, I can't say that we shouldn't take them seriously, but I can say that in every case when we have pushed them to the limit, they have stepped back. But they will, in fact, push us to the end, that's for sure. They will use every single diplomatic and possible foreign policy option they have. But I think that they will eventually retreat from their position if we show them a solid force.
Let's get some listeners involved if you'd like to join the conversation.
Could I describe one circumstance that surrounds us here?
If you could do so, yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just briefly. The Sudanese government has now been proven is complicit with the militia. So talking about negotiating with the government is precisely what they want to do. We'll be doing that till hell freezes over.
And that's what the State Department is doing right now.
Yeah, that's why what came out of the meeting, Tom, with the Secretary General yesterday about this time is that we have to have another meeting with him and with the chairman of the Senate committee, Lugar, and his counterpart, Corzine, with Hyde and Lantos, all of us together, because unless we really move our government, and this is where your work, Tom, becomes so important. We've got to, unless we're insisting without a wink and a nod to the Security Council that we get this designation, we won't be able to send in multinational troops. And we want to, and they have to be from neighboring states, and we want high proportions of Muslim Because
that's right.
What the Sudan is saying is that this is another Iraq evasion. We're being attacked on a totally false premise in this instance.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. Jane joins us from Mullica Hill in New Jersey.
Hi, my name is Jane. I have a question. My son is a United States soldier. My question to you is, where are you going to get these troops from, since I belong to an Army support group for mothers and wives, and I know for a fact our boys in Iraq and Afghanistan and Korea are stretched out beyond limits and to the point where they're unsafe. So where are we going to get these troops from? This is what my concern is.
Congressman Tancredo.
It's a legitimate concern. It is, in fact, I mean, she's absolutely right. We are stretched too thin. I for one, would not be for, you know, doing anything that would restrict our ability to operate where we are presently operating. But we don't have to do that. In fact, we have troops in the area, not in the Sudan, but in surrounding areas. If we needed to have any of those logistics that I've talked about before, you know, if we have to have troops that are working with the provision of logistics, we can do that without going into, you know, Iraq or any place else where we presently have troops. We can do it. It is not an issue of bleeding us someplace else for this purpose, because nobody is suggesting, certainly I'm not, that the United States do this unilaterally. You heard Congressman Conyers say that that would be the worst possible thing, because it would be portrayed then as an invasion of the West against a Muslim country.
And I should add this email we got from Miles Garrett in Lawrence, Kansas. I am currently a Marine reservist who thankfully has not been called to war in Iraq. I strongly disagree with our reasons for being there, and supporting our occupation would present me with quite a moral dilemma. That said, I would quickly volunteer for activation if I could help protect the people of Darfur. They absolutely need our assistance, and if we stand by and watch another genocide, I will be as ashamed of this country as I was following the Rwandan disaster.
Yes. No one wants to be in this position that we've been in since Rwanda, saying, oh my God, if we'd only known, oh my goodness, if we'd only taken action. We do know it is the same. The action needs to be taken. There are those of us, thank goodness for John Conyers, Don Payne, and others who have labored in this field for a long time, and I'll tell you that the labor is in fact bearing fruit. We are moving ahead. The United States is far more aggressive than any other country in the world in trying to bring this thing to an end. And I agree with my colleague. I will do everything I certainly can. I'm happy to meet with whomever he wants me to meet with and do whatever he wants me to do to move this process forward as quickly as possible.
Jane, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Michael. And Michael's with us from Santa Rosa, California.
Yeah, why do the non-Muslims have to take the lead in this? I mean, you know, where's the Arab League and the Islamic governments on this? It's a real black eye for them.
And the African Union. Congressman Conyers?
Because the African Union is slow to criticize their own rank, and only a couple nations have stepped up to the plate. And the same with the Arab communities. They're very sensitive now. I hesitate to say this, but the American reputation in the Middle East is that all they see is our troops and our use of force, and it's going to take a lot of negotiations. Secretary of State Powell just came back from the region. We now have, as Kofi Annan told us yesterday, we now have UN people on the ground taking stock of this, and that's why we've got to get them to believe that we're coming in here for totally humanitarian purposes.
Michael, thank you. Gentlemen, can you stay with us 5 minutes more? I know you're both busy.
I can,
but can I just tell you that
I'm going to have to wait till after the break, Congressman Conyers. More on Darfur in just a moment. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the situation in Darfur region of Sudan. Last week, both houses of the U.S. Congress declared this to be genocide. What should the U.S. government do? You're invited to join us, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with two of the men who moved this resolution through Congress, John Conyers of Michigan, and with us, Tom Tancredo of Colorado. They join us on the line, and I have to ask you, there have been, as you we mentioned earlier, negotiations underway between the State Department, Secretary Colin Powell, and the government in Khartoum. Congressman Tancredo, what do you make of the news today that the Sudanese government will soon release Islamist leader Hassan al-Turabi, who was jailed in March for inciting rebels in western Darfur region? This was, of course, he was president when Osama bin Laden lived in Sudan.
It is hard to say what this really means, if anything, although I must admit that they don't take actions without trying very hard to send messages along with it. So what it may mean is that they recognize that they've got problems internally. You know, the government in Khartoum is not all that stable. There have been coup attempts. The problem may be getting worse, and this may be something they're doing in order to try to salve some of the wounds that exist internally in their own structure.
Let's take a caller. Luke is with us from Elkhart, Indiana.
Yes, I spent some time in the south part of Sudan with an NGO and helping to work for peace between the SPLA and the GOS. I feel like there's something that we're not talking about here, and that is the rich oil wealth that exists in Sudan. U.S. petroleum companies and British petroleum companies would very much like to get oil concessions from the GOS, the government of Sudan in Khartoum. So I feel like we're not really the impartial broker of peace here. I think we'll be viewed very suspiciously in East Africa because we really have our own agenda.
Congressman Conyers?
Luke, yes. Luke, please add the country that's getting the most oil out of the Sudan is the Chinese government.
Yes, PetroChina.
Okay, now, please, nobody's been more sensitive to the oil question in the Middle East activities. But believe me, 30,000 or more have died. The projected amount is 1 million. There's certain diseases and sicknesses that have kicked in, so that if all governments did everything Tom Tancredo and I wanted starting tomorrow morning, there'd still be probably 100,000 or more that would die just because it's irreversible. So let us, please, for one time in our discussion, separate the oil question from the humanitarian question. We have Rwanda hanging over us like a specter.
And there's no talk whatsoever of removing the sanctions. We do not allow any American companies to operate in Sudan. I mean, that is present policy. No one is allowed to do it. They are under sanctions. And nobody's even suggesting that those be removed. I mean, just the opposite. I and Congressman Payne, actually, part of the Sudan Peace Act that got through the House and really did sort of get the attention of everyone over in the White House and in the Senate was something that prevented anybody operating in Sudan, any other foreign company that's operating in Sudan, from actually having access to our capital markets. We were going to restrict anybody from being able to sell stock on an American stock exchange. And that really...
Those are tough sanctions. Those are really tough sanctions.
Well, I'm not suggesting that the humanitarian need is not there. I'm sure it's there. I've seen it myself. I'm just saying that if we're wishing to be perceived in the world as an impartial broker of peace and the ones who can resolve these humanitarian issues, we really need to be honest about what some of our interests are, not necessarily.
But we're not over there. We're prevented from being over there. That's what Congressman Tancredo was explaining. We can't get our humanitarian motives questioned on this one because we've prevented in advance the likelihood of us trying to get in on the oil thing.
Luke, thanks very much for the call.
We may be giving up our rights to those claims. That's true.
Okay.
Well, best of luck.
Okay, thanks very much. And thanks to our guests as well. John Conyers, very good of you to join us today.
It's a pleasure indeed.
Congressman John Conyers, a representative from Michigan, and he joined us from NPR studios at the Democratic Convention there in Boston. And Thomas Tancredo, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much for allowing us to address this issue.
Tom Tancredo, a representative, a Republican from the state of Colorado, and he joined us on the phone from there. Now joining us here in Studio 3A is David Shin. He was Deputy Chief of Mission at the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum, Sudan from 1983 to 1986, later served as Ambassador to Ethiopia. Thanks very much for coming in with us today.
My pleasure to join you.
And with us on the line is Princeton Lyman, Senior Fellow and Director of African Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. He also served as Ambassador to both Nigeria and South Africa. He's with us on the phone from here in Washington. Good of you to join us today.
Thank you.
And let me begin with you, Ambassador Shin. We've heard news that the Foreign Minister of Sudan said today that they would respond with force to any intervention, military intervention, that might be portrayed as humanitarian intervention in Darfur. What's the possibility of a well-intentioned intervention resulting in military conflict with Sudan?
Well, it's always possible it could get out of hand, but the Sudanese officials have said various things. And in fact, in an interview a couple of days ago, President Bashir said he did not totally rule out the possibility of cooperation with foreign forces. So I think you have to read very carefully between the lines in order to ascertain exactly where they are on any given day. I would not imagine this ending up in some sort of conflict between Sudanese government troops and foreign troops.
Let me ask you, Ambassador Lyman, there are a lot of American options. You heard earlier, perhaps, that Congressman Conyers calling for another meeting with the heads of the Foreign Relations Committee in Congress and the various UN officials. But things are going on now. What's to be done now?
Well, I think that the United States is in a difficult position because while we have been taking a lead role in trying to get international pressure on this, we are faced with the Sudanese very cleverly portraying our interests and other interests as a kind of an anti-Islamic or anti-Arab campaign. I think we have to work very closely with the African countries, put pressure on the African countries who have already offered and will be putting military observers into the region. I think we have to signal that we would provide logistic and other support for a military force in the region and put more pressure on the Sudanese government by sending that signal and sending it up front.
As anybody can tell by looking at a map, Sudan is a huge country. Darfur, a region roughly the size of France in the western part of that country, that ends up being towards the middle of Africa. This is not a simple logistic exercise, is it, Ambassador Shin?
No, it's not simple at all, and I agree 100% with Princeton Lyman that the major effort should be to try to engage the African Union and the African forces to a far greater extent than they are engaged. They have agreed to put up to 300 monitors into Darfur. That's not nearly enough for the size of an area the size of France. You probably need several thousand. But I think it makes far more sense for them to do this kind of thing than for Western troops or American troops. We don't do all that well in those parts of the world where we don't speak the language, we don't know the culture, and it's a very low-tech kind of situation. The African troops are far better at it.
Princeton Lyman, would this not be seen by at least some in Sudan as not a humanitarian intervention, but intervention on one side in a civil war?
Well, I think they're going to portray it in a variety of different ways, and they've tried to do that as an anti-Arab, as an anti-Islamic, as an anti-African. But the fact is that this is a humanitarian crisis of enormous proportion, and the Sudanese government is not taking the steps it needs to take, and it's spilling over into Chad, and it has a lot of other international repercussions. So I think the argument of the Sudanese that we're intervening in a civil war is not valid under these circumstances. The Secretary General and the Secretary of State have said that the Sudanese government is clearly not doing enough and not doing what it promised to do to bring the militia under control.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Gene, who's with us from Forestville, California.
Hi.
Hi, Gene. Go ahead.
Yeah. What I would like to know is, since the Arabs and the Muslims don't want us anywhere, why are they not sending their armies? Where are the Syrians? Where are the Jordanians? The Saudis? Are the only Arabs they care about the Palestinians? I mean, why aren't they telling this? And the Egyptians, they could be putting a lot of pressure on Sudan. Why don't they do it?
Ambassador Shin?
Of course, we don't know behind the scenes what the Syrians or the Egyptians or the Jordanians are saying. I think your point is well taken to an extent. They're probably not doing a great deal. They're certainly not sending troops, but I'm not sure that that would be the most appropriate group to send troops. If you're going to have far more monitors going in my view, it ought to be a combination of both the sub-Saharan Africans and North Africans, perhaps Tunisians, perhaps Moroccans, South Africans, Kenyans. I don't think that Syrians and Egyptians are going to help the situation. They likely would make it worse.
Would they help with financing the situation?
I think the financing, by and large, has to come under the aegis of the United Nations. It has to have some sort of UN... umbrella over it, and the financing ultimately is going to come from UN member states. If there's going to be a significant operation with logistical support, as Princeton Lyman suggested, from the Western countries.
The UN, Princeton Lyman, has been asking for immediate help in the form of practical things like helicopters to help monitor the situation in Darfur. As it's also been mentioned, Sudanese aircraft have been implicated in some coordinated attacks with the Janjaweed militia in this area. Calling for a no-fly zone. Would those be helpful?
Actually, I think a no-fly zone would be very helpful, though it would have to be enforceable, and I don't think we have the equipment in the region to enforce it like we did in Iraq. But I think it would be a good provision to put through, of course, accepting humanitarian intervention. I might just comment on the lady's question about Arab governments. I saw an editorial in the Egyptian press a couple of weeks ago castigating the Arab countries for not doing more on the Sudan situation. I think it's a disgrace that they haven't stepped up and put political pressure on Sudan to bring this situation under control. And I think we should certainly work harder with Egypt, because Egypt does have a great deal of influence in Sudan, and at least for them to put political pressure on the Sudanese to do more to stop the violence.
I believe Secretary Powell is either in Egypt or on his way to Egypt today to talk. I think his talks are mostly focused on the situation in the Middle East, but he has certainly been engaged on the situation in Sudan as well. Okay. We're speaking with two former American ambassadors to the region, David Shin, now an adjunct professor at George Washington University here in Washington, D.C. He served as a deputy chief of mission in the U.S. Embassy in Sudan from 1983 to 1986, later ambassador to Ethiopia. Also with us is Princeton Lyman, senior fellow and director of African Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria and South Africa. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question from Angela in Corvallis. Would we be able to get fast action and more monies to help the Darfur citizens if we define the Arab militia and the supporting government as terrorist organizations? Not that I support the current war on terror, but I think it'll actually prove itself useful if it gets this dire job done. Is the declaration by Congress of this as genocide, is that a step in that direction, Ambassador Shin?
I think you want to be careful about not muddying the waters and calling something terrorist, particularly international terrorism, if in fact it is not that. There is a great debate, of course, as to whether this should be labeled genocide or ethnic cleansing. It really seems to be beside the point. It's a terrible situation, and it needs to be dealt with. The lawyers can sort out whether it is genocide or it is something other than genocide.
But doesn't the declaration of genocide kick in the treaty, as Congressman Conyers said?
It would indeed, in theory, kick in the treaty, although the treaty is, the convention is not absolutely specific in terms of what you do. It says you do something, but it doesn't define what it is. But it would up the ante. There's no question about it.
Would that be a contribution, Princeton Lyman?
Well, I think that what we have to recognize since Rwanda and in looking at the Convention on Genocide is that while we said after Rwanda that we wouldn't allow this to happen again, we have not put into place, and I say we by I mean the United Nations as well as the countries of the United Nations, we haven't put in the instruments that are necessary to prevent this kind of thing. Remember that the convention talks not only about genocide, but preventing genocide. And clearly, we have the criteria now for the need to prevent genocide or further genocide. And what we're seeing is that we don't have the instruments. We don't have the political analysis and intelligence that 6 months ago would have said definitively in the UN, we have an impending genocide coming. We don't have the instruments that say, let's respond quickly with either security or humanitarian mechanisms. We're still struggling ad hoc with how to respond, and I think that is in a terrible lesson for what we haven't yet learned from the Rwanda experience.
Well, let me ask you, Ambassador Shin, building on what Princeton Lyman just said, the United States is currently engaged in a very important and difficult conflict in Iraq. It hopes to get more support from the Arab nations that it would be, to some degree, castigating in the situation in terms of Sudan. It would be risking another confrontation with them in this confrontation, if it were a confrontation with Sudan. Certainly, the Sudanese government is not going to welcome intervention in Darfur province. Some would say that's because it is the source of the problems in Darfur province. What likelihood do you think anything is going to happen?
I still think there's a reasonable possibility of obtaining a Sudanese agreement for a much larger African force, which may have Western logistical and intelligence backup. I think this is the best way to go. I think you need to work something out that is at least marginally acceptable to the government, but yet stops the harm that is being done in Darfur, which is, in the first instance, what everyone wants to have done. But I don't think the government on its own is going to do that. So someone has to go in and help out.
Thank you both very much. We appreciate your time today. We were speaking with David Shin, former ambassador to Ethiopia and professor now at George Washington University. Thanks very much for your time today.
Pleased to join you.
And Princeton Lyman on the line with us, senior fellow and director of African Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, former ambassador to two African countries. Thank you for joining us today as well.
Thank you for dealing with this issue.
To find out how you can help in Darfur, you can find a list of organizations offering humanitarian assistance at npr.org. When we come back from a short break, Comedy Central's The Daily Show's Lewis Black joins us from Boston with his analysis of last night's opening night of the Democratic National Convention. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.